Blog Talk Radio.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption.
Redemption song. That's Bob Marley opening up for us today, the song of freedom. This is the Jennifer Cobb and Justice for All Incorporated show here at Human Rights Demand Channel at Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to our Thursday evening program. It is now slightly after 6 p.m. Eastern, and we want you to know that you're welcome to call in. The phone number here is 347-857-3293. I'm very proud to turn it over now to Ms. Jennifer Cobb. Ms. Cobb, you and I are currently the only two people online, and I understand that we're expecting an author to call, the author of Black Lives Didn't Matter. So I turn it over to you, Ms. Cobb. How are you?
Well, I'm well, thank you. And how's yourself?
Oh, I'm doing very well. I appreciate your asking. It's been a beautiful week. We had some good news regarding one of the clients for my organization, which is assistance to the incarcerated mentally ill, and that is that a young man who was incarcerated in Washington County Detention Center in Tennessee was released from incarceration. There are still some things to be done in that case, but we're glad that he's no longer suffering in solitary confinement. And we want to thank the guards who he said he wants to thank, guards who were kind to him, except for a black man who maced him and threatened to taser him. And other than that, he said that the guards were mostly kind to him. And we want to also send our appreciation to the Johnson City, Tennessee Police Force, who conducted a lunacy arrest on Mr. Johnson without hurting him. And so I want to congratulate police officers who use their compassion and they use their skills to arrest a person who's in mental health crisis without hurting them. And so thank you very much, Johnson City Police Department, and thank you to the guards who were kind to Mr. Johnson while he was in custody. We're going to look forward to getting him into the hospital so that he can be examined thoroughly, physically and mentally, and given the help that he deserves and that all people who are suffering from mental illness and having mental health crises deserve, not jail, not prison. So thank you for asking Ms. Jennifer Cobb how my week went. We do have a guest online now at 7514. How are you today? 7514. How are you?
Is that me that you're talking to?
Yeah.
Well, I think
it is. Oh, okay. This is Mama
Zeke.
This is a line that I seldom use. So when you said 7514, I messed up. Okay, thank you. Assalamu alaikum. I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. My name is Mary Neal. I'm channel director at Human Rights Demand. We want to welcome you to the Jennifer Cobb and Justice for All Incorporated show. And so now that you and Ms. Cobb are both online, I'm going to make myself scarce. Ms. Cobb, I want you to know that due to circumstances beyond our control, our show today will only last for 45 minutes. We're changing the credit card number, and so we couldn't get the two-hour show today until we input the new credit card information. So we have another approximate 35 minutes to be on air. So I'm going to get out of the way and let you two discuss this interesting book. Thank you very much for coming.
Okay, thank you. And before we continue, let me introduce you to Muhammad Sadiq. He has written eloquent. Beg your pardon?
No, you go right ahead. That was my daughter.
Oh, okay.
A big family, you know, everything comes into play. You go ahead.
Yes. Well, he has written an eloquent book called Black Lives Didn't Matter. And depending on his schedule for next week, perhaps we can continue the conversation next week as well. But let me go ahead and turn over the floor to you. And could you tell us about your book?
Okay, my book is Black Lives Didn't Matter When Indianapolis Police Murdered Michael Taylor and Lied. And that's the whole title. And then the subtitle is Where Are You, Daddy? Where Are You, Daddy? And so that's the entire book. And we released it today. And I had a press conference today, and we expect to get a lot of feedback from the book, but we don't know how or when it's coming. But we didn't get the kind of media turnout that we would have hoped for. But that's typical of Indianapolis. You know, it's a city that, well, it has some very good people in it, but somehow they're very naive and have not been able to connect the dots, put it that way.
Very true. And it's been my experience with the media that they don't like to cover controversial issues such as the Michael Taylor case. Why don't you explain to the listeners who Michael Taylor was and exactly what happened? How did he get murdered?
Michael Taylor was a 16-year-old African-American youth who was coming home from school, allegedly attempted to steal a car. Now, maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We don't know. But according to the people who claim they saw him, they saw this young African-American youngster in a car outside of a repair shop for some of the fire department's vehicles. And when this person came out and saw him in the car, Michael, if it was him, ran. And so they in turn notified a police car who was riding through the area and told them that it was an attempted auto theft. And then the police put out a all call saying, look out for this person in this area, and it just had taken place. Now, one of the things that one of the people at the repair shop said was that he had something in his hand that they felt or thought was a weapon. And so, which would make the all call to the police look out for someone with a weapon. So anyhow, in the final analysis, the police, two or three officers in the area, sort of cordoned off the area and catcher, Michael. Michael was dressed in a pair of shorts, tennis shoes with white socks, high socks that were down, rolled down by his tennis shoe, and a body shirt on with Gold's Gym written on it, and a hat. And that's all he had. Very, very few. You know, it was a warm day. It was, in fact, it was this day, September the 24th, and this took place in 87. So anyhow, Michael was arrested, and within 40 minutes or so, maybe a little more, you hear them moving Michael to juvenile headquarters on their way to juvenile, and within that next 10 minutes, Michael's brains are blown out of his head. Now, before they put Michael in the police car, they searched him six times. And three officers searched him six times. And they claim that when they got to juvenile, Michael had smuggled a gun into the police car and was able to, with his hands cuffed behind his back, he was able to, according to them, take the gun out of his sock and blow his brains out of his head on an angle back to front. Not front to back, back to front. In other words, like if you had a choice of the nozzle of the gun being on his head, it would be closer to his eyebrow than it would be to his ear. Okay, to his eyebrow on an angle facing from the front to back, as opposed to an angle near his ear going back to front. So anyhow, this case was challenged, and they want to say Michael committed suicide. Well, we did the research, and there's nothing in the research that even remotely suggests he committed suicide. And they took it to a civil trial. They never had an independent investigation. They had a lot of sham investigations, but all of the people involved joined in on this cover up in trying to keep the murder of Michael Taylor from getting out into the public. I believe that the reason why they were so intent on not letting it get out, because at that time in Indianapolis, Indianapolis's golden moment had arrived, where they were going to ride the golden coattails of Dan Quayle into political heaven, who was then selected in that year to be the vice president under the first George Bush. So anyhow, that has gone on. It went to a civil trial. They moved the trial out of Indianapolis. They moved it to an all-Caucasian town where they felt they would have the best chances. And when the jury came back from the civil trial, they agreed with us and not the police that Michael did not commit suicide. Someone had to kill him. And they awarded Michael's mother nearly $5 million. Now, our concern is that was not what we were working for. I mean, we were very, very pleased to see that his mother would get a civil victory. But our concern was the wheels of justice have to turn. If one of our citizens, one of the citizens in our country, and rightfully so, if they commit a crime, these same police officers that want to just put that away and just keep on going, they will not stop until they get the person who pulled the trigger, who killed one of their own, if it was one of their own. And we just believe that it is only right that the full reins of justice are pulled out and put down, and that we follow this case all the way to its proper conclusion, which is not putting it away and accepting suicide when every fact in the case points to the fact that they're lying. So that's a quick summary of a very, very complicated case. But that's why I've written a book, and the book was released today. And as I said, the name of the book is Black Lives Didn't Matter When Indianapolis Police Murdered Michael Taylor and Lied. I wrote the book because just trying to tell people about it, it doesn't compute. You have to sit down. You have to pull. It's a slow, tedious work. You have to pull documentation up. You have to take transcripts. You have to compare the transcripts with what has already been said. You have to show the time relativity to what you're saying. You have to show the inconsistencies in what they were trying to make the public believe. You have to take all of these things into consideration. And it took me, and I could have easily tripled the size of the book, but I stopped at around 615, 620 pages. This is what we released today. And I'm thinking that if we were wise as a people, if we were wise as a people, and if we would just quit becoming so turf orientated and see the bigger picture, where we could pull our intelligence together from across this country and take the one case that we have with proof and documentation of what they did, and all of us gang up on this one case, get together on this one case, and bring justice to this. This would open the door to getting justice in many of these other cases where we, in most cases, where all these cases that have taken place in the last year or two, all of these cases, I don't see one case where we have independently investigated, independently documented, independently presented evidence that proves beyond a shadow of doubt of what we are alleging. We have boycotted, we have protested, we have marched, we have shouted, and these things are good for a season, but they're not the ultimate final answer. And what I'm saying is, in this case, with the Michael Taylor case, what makes it so different is this was all rational. We sat down, we organized a group of people called the People's Inquest, and we subpoenaed people. And we didn't use legal subpoena power. We requested their presence at our meetings and at our hearings. And we videotaped our witnesses. So what we have is a total record of what took place. I can go back and recreate this entire narrative with videotapes, with audio tapes, with film, and where the people who we interviewed and the people who we questioned, we were able to get them on record of stating what they had to state. And so this is sort of a short oversight of the Michael Taylor case. And this is where we are right now. And hopefully this radio broadcast, as well as others in the future, will help us reach out and find like minds who will come together in a rational way and sit down and see if we can take and use this as the wedge that will open the door for the justice that we've been trying to get.
Well, thank you. Ms. Cobb, could I say something?
Yes.
Yes. All right. Yes. Thank you for bringing us this author today, Black Lives Didn't Matter. I want you to know that you have four other callers on the line, and this is a very interesting book, and we know the title is Black Lives Didn't Matter. And I have been listening to find out where the book is available, if it's Amazon.com or if it's available in bookstores. I think that's important. And I want to apologize to our audience today. We're going to have a shorter show. It will end at 6:30, and we usually are allowed to stay online for an additional 15 minutes. So by 6:45, this show will definitely conclude. And so I want to thank all of you for coming. If you want to call in, you must call in before 6:30, And for the last time, the phone number is 347-857-3293. All your phones are live on air right now. And if you must talk or move around, please hit the mute button on your own phone so you won't disturb the rest of the show. So everybody is live, Ms. Cobb, and you have four other callers other than your special guest today. And I want to thank your guest again for writing this book. Many, many people have been accused of committing suicide, and I suspect that these other murders happened after the one he's talking about. What year did this young man die?
It took place, the actual killing was 1987. The trial did not materialize. Now, I'm hearing a feedback. I don't know where it's coming from, whether it's me or anyone else, but the trial did not take place until 1996. And then there was an appeal to the verdict. The verdict awarded the mother initially $5 million. I think it was over $5 million. And they appealed it, and I think it went down to between close to $4.5 million. And but anyhow, this is a precedent. It's the never in the history of African American people or Caucasian people has there been a grassroots, rank and file group of people who came together. They didn't go out to the streets and protest and holler and scream. They came together, and we collected every bit of existing evidence that there is, and we analyzed it, put it on spreadsheets. We went so far as even we went to when we were trying to analyze it in terms of the voice at the time that they claimed that Michael was shot. We claimed that there's two different voices that were in that police car, which meant there was somebody else in that police car with Michael. They claimed that he was alone in there just with the driver. So it was only one voice, just the driver. So we called MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and I got in touch with a man named Mr. Berkowitz, who was the one of the scientists who helped analyze the JFK shooting and the sound of the bullet, the sound of at the grassy knoll, and also they had worked on plane crashes. I mean, big people. And so when I called, he all but laughed at me. But he was so beautiful. He said, "Well, look, if you got something, you think you got something, you come on up here and I'll talk with you." I went up there, and I gave him what I had. He said, "Okay, we'll take a look at it. We don't know, you know." And I left. But he was very nice. Took me around, showed me the lab and all these great big computers and everything, how to analyze sound. It wasn't two or three days later, my phone was ringing. This man was more excited than me. He said, "You got something. There's two voices in that car." And that did it, you know. And so that's just one thing. I tell you, there's another thing about the blood in the back of the car, but I'll let some of the callers come in because I understand we're on limited time right now.
Yes. Are there any callers that want to ask questions?
Oh, yes, ma'am. This is Abraham Bennett's real friend. How you doing?
Yes, I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Yes, and
go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question was, when he actually filed the lawsuit or whatever, who actually filed it for him? Was it private attorneys or
private attorney
family members filed it? Private attorney.
Private attorney for the mother. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That was one of the questions that I had. Okay, go ahead. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other callers that want to ask a question? Well, let me say that there are, as Mary Neal had pointed out, there are other cases out there like that. One being Chavis Carter, and the other being Victor White III, and the other one being Jesus Jareto, I believe is his last name. But Victor White III, they are calling it the Houdini suicide. So if we had a catch-all term for all of them, then we would say it was a Houdini suicide, because everything that these police officers are saying, Michael Taylor case including, is that it is impossible. And when I lived in Indiana and I saw these police officers trying to reenact that it could be possible to commit suicide in that manner, is the same way that they did with Chavis Carter. But nobody believes it. Nobody believes it. I didn't believe it with Michael Taylor case. Obviously, the jury didn't believe that Michael Taylor killed himself. And correct me if I'm wrong, Sadiq, it's my understanding that the jury that agreed that Michael Taylor did not kill himself was an all-white jury. Am I correct on that?
That's 100% correct. They came back and they said it then. I went out to see the foreman of the jury about a month ago, 2 months ago, and she said, I stand by my decision. She said, the most ridiculous thing she ever saw. She said, they were unanimous. She said, there wasn't a soul dissenting, you know, in there, you know. So,
you know, we have corrupt, well, now it's called IMPD. I guess it's Indianapolis Metropolitan
Police Department. Mm-hmm.
So we have a corrupt police department, and we have corrupt politicians as well. I think, who was the mayor back then?
Hudnut.
Mayor Hudnut. And so we're going to include him as part of this corruption and conspiracy.
Oh, he was a part of it. He was actively involved in the cover-up. Not only he, but the prosecutor, Steve Goldsmith, he was actively involved in the cover-up. Both of them. I mean, this is why I had to write the book, because just, you know, I tried to do, you know, the radio and TV and things like that. It just takes so much detail to try and show and set the stage as to what took place and how it took place. And so you just have to read the book and then come back firing some questions.
Right.
Okay. Now, how would we go about purchasing your book?
Well, right now, you have to get in touch with me, and I can give you two things. I can give you my phone number, and I can give you my email address.
You can do that now.
Yes. My phone number is 847-7805. 317-847-7805. That's my phone number. And my email is msadiq@aol.com, spelled M S I, two D's, two E's, and a Q. msadiq@aol.com. msiddeeq@aol.com. And I'll see that your book is $29.99. Plus mailing, whatever. And so I'll see to it that you get your book immediately. But I'm telling you, it's the key. What I see in this is more of a challenge to the African-American community to see if we have what it takes to come together and work for a common cause. Because we have... This book, in this case, is a precedent. It's a precedent. It's a model. It's a model. It's a sample of what we can do. And what all I'm saying is, if instead of us being divided, each person going after Freddie Gray, this one going after Trayvon Martin, this one going, you got to handle those things too. But if we all could come together and support lifting the book up. The reason why I'm saying lifting up, because Muhammad Siddiq wrote it, but because there's nothing else out there like this. There's no documented evidence orientated with quotes and scripts. And keep in mind, all the documentation came from the police files. I didn't have any independent document. I didn't have no silver bullet that I got. I found something in the desert somewhere, or I happened to rub a lamp and a genie showed up and he said, aha, here, I'm going to give you this. No, what we have is the same thing they have. And it's just showing you how they refuse to really show respect to the actual evidence that they have. Because if I'm able to take this and show rationally and objectively that these things that they're presenting have no justification for a suicide, they're going to try and tell me, here's a young boy, he's supposed to have committed suicide with his hands cuffed behind his back, shot himself in the head from front to back. He shot himself, and after he finished shooting himself in the head, blowing his brains out, when the police officer came in, opened the car door and found him, he still had the finger from his right hand and the finger from his left hand still on the trigger, and he had contorted his body in such a way that the gun was pointing at the police officer as he entered from the driver's side of the car, in the back of the car. Insane. Insane. Houdini wouldn't even attempt to try and tell you that. Nevertheless, do it. It's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know something?
Go ahead.
Yeah, you know something, Ms. Nils and Ms. Cobbs? What's the gentleman's name that's speaking?
Michael Taylor.
Okay, your name is Michael Taylor?
No. My name is Muhammad Siddiq.
Siddiq, okay. You're making reference to Mr. Taylor that was actually killed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing is that the reason that they get away with so much stuff and so blatantly and so open with it is because they don't look for us to be conscious enough to actually defend ourselves in a logical and rational way. So that's so what you're saying is really actually good on our behalf and to a lot of good points. But they had the audacity to be so arrogant because they don't look for us to come together and be that force that something to be reckoned with. Like, say you take the Spanish or the Chinese or any other denomination of people, they'll get more justice going forward because they'll be more unified going forward. You know, but with us as a people, as so-called black people of America, we have the tendency to forgive and forget so easily, you know? And that's the problem that we actually having, but by y'all writing the book and the tapes and stuff like that, I'm in perfect agreement with it because it brings consciousness to what's going on. And anytime you got consciousness, it makes it hard for the oppressor and anybody else to be able to rule over you and do a lot of things that's morally and ethically wrong. When you bring attention to it, you bring a consciousness to it. And so I would support that myself, you know?
And, you know, and Brother made some excellent points. And of the excellent point, the one that he made is, if we could come together and hang our ego up at the door and come on in the room and sit down, come in, please. If we could do that, Ghani, and tell him, I always talk to other people. So, if we could come together and support one person, we could get this problem resolved overnight. If we could do that. But we have to be willing to hang our ego up and come in and accept somebody as a leading this cause and accept a idea that we're going to push this all the way through. If we push this through, this will open up the door for a million different things.
Dr. Jai, ego.
Yes, because there is no statute of limitations when it comes to murder.
Exactly.
And so right. what we seek is justice. What we seek is the police officers and all that who are involved. We seek them to have prison time. Am I correct?
We think that they have what now?
We seek for them to have prison time.
Yeah, well, if that's what is due, and that's exactly what I think is due.
Right. You know, the thing is, the people, you know, even dealing with democracy and the people have the power to rule. The entities, the police department, the governors, the mayors, the senators, and all the other people that's sitting in positions of authority, they only have the authority that the people give them. But the people give them the authority, it's up to the people to actually demand justice and take it back. These people are elected officials, but they get it misconstrued when they get in positions of power, and they think that they basically are actually run the world, never knowing that they actually neophytes that can be easily replaced. So the people have to demand justice in a moral and ethical way for us actually, and I'm in agreement with Mr. Siddiqui or whatever his name. I hope I'm pronouncing his name
That's
right.
Siddiqui.
Siddiqui. And I'm in agreement, you know, there has to be some moral standing. And sometimes it takes a little courage, you know, because I can imagine with them going forward because, you know, I'm dealing with Abraham Israel case and, you know, the stuff that we're going through in the open, disrespect for the laws that, even with the laws that they wrote, and the stuff that, and I'm in agreement again because if you listen to some of the stuff that they want us to believe, I mean, it's probably comical for them to even actually put it in front of us as a notion or as a thought because it'd be so insane. You know what I mean? So I just think that we got to start supporting each other and we got to start coming together, I mean, seriously, and start making things happen. In a positive way, you know?
Beautiful.
Not protesting in the street, not arguing, not fussing, not fighting, not tearing up our own communities, because when the rest of the world see that and they stereotype us and portray us as second-class citizens or not even being as human beings. So we want to remain human and we want to remain with dignity and respect and we want to act. Matter of fact, what comes to my mind is the song Classic Man. That this new song that came out, I'm not really a song person, whatever, right? But in that song, it do show this guy having a little morals, and even for the police, he dealing with him with a respectful way, you know? And those are some of the things that we have to do as a people.
You're
we
absolutely
have to actually demand
right.
Justice.
I am so glad to hear both of you. Ms. Jennifer Cobb brought this author forward. And I'm so glad to meet him online and know about his book that's entitled Black Lives Didn't Matter. He gave his phone number and email address so that we can send for a copy. The price of the book, I understand, to be $21. Is that right?
No,
$29.99. And it seems like it's for a very worthy amount of information that we can use. As you know, the so-called suicides did not stop with this young man. Because the police got away with his murder, I have documented another four cases. Mr. Wright in Louisiana, Chavis Carter in Arkansas, and then a man in another state, I didn't bring my notes, but there have been other cases where people were in situations where it was absolutely impossible for them to have committed suicide. They had been searched multiple times, just as this young man had, and handcuffed behind the back and positioned in the back seat of a police car, and they were killed. And supposedly they killed themselves. So I'm so glad that you've documented probably one of the first cases of this happening. And I just am very proud of Sister Cobb for bringing you forward. And I'm very proud of the book that you wrote. This book has the propensity to save lives because we don't need any more so-called suicides happening in the back of police cars. And I think that this situation needs to stop right here, right now. And people need to know that we have long memories. Some of us do not forget, because this was a 1987 case.
Right.
But let me ask you just one question. Is the DA the same today as the DA was in 1987?
No. There's been at least four or five different ones since that time.
Did anyone approach the DA and ask him, would he be interested in reopening that case?
I have.
And what was the response?
His response was that it's established that Michael committed suicide.
He said it's established when the jury disagreed. And how much money did the jury award Michael's mother?
Almost $5 million.
Almost $5 million. So the
right.
jury didn't believe it, obviously, an all-white jury, we might add. And I
exactly.
just want to commend, I just want to say one thing before we go on, and that is that I want everyone to know that Caucasians are just as capable of dealing justly with
oh,
blacks
yeah.
as blacks
oh, yeah.
are. And I want to commend that jury because they did not come back with the expected verdict because a young 17-year-old black young man was killed. They came back with a just verdict, and I want to commend them. And I want to let the whole world know that 16, that
yes.
many Caucasians in America do have a love for justice, and they will do the right thing. We
That's
saw
exactly
that when
right.
we saw the people marching for Black Lives Matter. We saw that when we saw the people marching for Hands Up, Don't Shoot. Many whites are very concerned about the genocide of unarmed black people in America. And I want to commend all of them and thank you again for coming. Ms.
Well,
Cobb,
thank you so very
you.
Much. I'm available. Just give me a call. Thank you so very much for having me on.
Well, thank you, Speak. Hopefully you'll be able to come back on Thursday of next week so we can further talk about the Michael Taylor case.
Okay.
And the corruption that's going on with these politicians, Goldsmith, Steve Goldsmith, Hudnut, and with even them involved in their own illegal corruption of prostitution and drug ring. And they were involved. And Goldsmith was involved in a child molestation that he molested a boy when the boy grew up named Joe Love. To make a long story short, we'll talk about that later. They
okay.
killed him. Thank
you. Well, I want to thank you. I have another appointment I have to go to. Give me a call, and I'll be back on next week if you need me.
Will do.
Thank you.
You so much.
Bye now.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. We've got a couple more minutes. Are there any
yeah,
other callers on the line?
Yeah, Ms. Cobbs. If nobody else have anything to say, you know, when listening to his story and listening to stuff that going on with us around the world, a few things that come to my mind is Hosea 4:6. You know, and a lot of us are familiar with that scripture where it say that my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. And that's what's destroying us around the world. And probably, you know, in Zechariah chapter 11, verse 5, where it say, who possesses slay them and hold themselves not guilty. And they that sell them say, blessed is the Lord Yahweh, for I am rich. And their own shepherds pity them not. The problem that we have in a lot of instances is our own shepherds that's not really pitying us. You know, they show up for like profit and gain in a lot of instances, but when they know fanfare, they're not there. So it's our own shepherds. You know, we got the grassroots, we got you, Ms. Mary Neal, and Ms. Carbs yourself. You know, and y'all doing an excellent job is trying to reach out. But what about reaching out to some of these pastors and preachers that got congregations and organizations and stuff like that, and make them put their hand to the fire and make them actually stand for justice, you know? I mean,
to make them accountable.
Make them accountable. You know, they taken they haven't. Some of them have mad congregations, you know, that paying their tithes and their offerings and stuff like that. And it's to build a church and build a community. But sometimes the church is not built just on a physical. You know, the church is more spiritual than it ever is physical, because you only handle the physical business once a week sometimes, or maybe twice sometimes in a lot of instances, or maybe two, three times, or maybe a little more. But they got to be held accountable for some of this stuff that's going on. You know, because unless they, you know, fulfill in the scripture themselves, when they say, our own shepherds pity us not. I mean, this stuff is actually, you know, it's unprecedented in history itself, at the level of killing and the level of stuff that's taking place right now. You know, this stuff is unmatched. Anywhere down from history all the way up until this very present day and time, you know? And I'm pretty sure they're conscious of it, but they got to be more open and out front with their thoughts and behavior, as opposed to just talking behind closed doors and just saying what is wrong and this and that, you know?
Okay.
So that was just my point of view, you know?
Well, that's a wonderful point of view. We have really run out of time. We're inviting you back on, a friend of Abraham Ben Israel. And I thank all the listeners for calling in, and stay tuned next week. We will continue with this topic. And I will leave the last word to Mary Nell.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Mary?
Thank you, audience. Thank you, Ms. Cobb. Thank you, Abraham Israel's friend, to the author of Black Lives Didn't Matter. Thank you for coming, audience. Come back next Thursday at 6 p.m. for another episode. Good day to you. Please share the tape. Share the tape. We don't want to keep truth to ourselves. God bless you, and goodbye.
Okay, thank you, guys.